From Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is The Local Edition. And I'm Jason Dolb. Thank you so much for being here with me this evening. Coming up, a massive historic brick building near the Hudson River in Poughkeepsie has been burning for more than a day. Elias Guerra reports from the scene later in the program. Plus, we have an update on the 700-acre, 20-plus building data center campus proposed in Clinton Township in Wayne County, Pennsylvania. The River Reporter's Liam Mayo is at the township's Planning Commission meeting last night, and he'll bring us the latest. And in other news from Northeast PA, Wayne County's Child Protection Agency still has a license to operate, but last week, state officials downgraded that license to provisional, citing multiple failures. They've got 6 months to make amends, and we've got all the details coming up on that story in just a couple of minutes. We're going to start tonight with news from Albany, where the legislative session is winding down. Redistricting is on the table, and gerrymandering is in the air. Republicans say New York Democrats are being hypocritical by changing the state constitution to let the Empire State join the national redistricting wars. The State Assembly and Senate started the process of amending the state constitution by approving a resolution along party lines. The amendment allows for mid-decade redistricting and also repeals the state's prohibition on partisan gerrymandering. Democrats say the changes are needed because Republicans have redrawn maps in GOP-controlled states to help their party in congressional elections. State Senator George Borrello is a Republican from Chautauqua County. He says that's no excuse.
You can blame it on whatever injustice you want. This is about rigging the system to stay in power, no matter how harmful your policies have been to the people of New York State, to the quality of life here.
The amendment to allow for mid-decade redistricting must be approved again by lawmakers in 2027 and then would go to the ballot later that year. Speed cameras are coming to more work zones across New York as part of the state budget approved by lawmakers last week. Samuel King with the New York Public News Network has more on where drivers will now see the cameras and what more penalties could be on the way for drivers.
There are portable work zone cameras on roadways like the New York State Thruway or other high-speed expressways already. Now that technology can be deployed on all State Department of Transportation highways. After years of decline, crashes in work zones on the state thruway surged last year to their highest level since 2020, resulting in dozens of injuries. State highways also recorded hundreds of crashes. Senate Transportation Committee Chairman Jeremy Cooney, a Rochester Democrat, says improving safety for workers is critical.
When we go out and ask them to do this work on the roads, whether it's on a state road or a local road, our workers need to feel safe. And unfortunately, they don't.
The Thruway Authority says they've seen a year-over-year decrease in average speeds in work zones since the cameras were installed, but still have issued hundreds of thousands of citations over the past 2 years. Cooney says he's hoping to get bills passed that would increase penalties for drivers who fail to move over in work zones and for drivers who are constant speeders through work zones. In Albany, I'm Samuel King for the New York Public News Network.
Efforts aimed at lowering ticket prices for concerts or sporting events appear to have stalled again in Albany. Lawmakers sought to ban the sale of tickets for more than face value and cap the percentage of fees that ticketers and resale platforms can charge. Speaker Carl Hasty says it would be hard to squeeze in big changes before lawmakers leave Albany tomorrow, so instead state lawmakers are poised to extend the state's current secondary ticket market regulations for one more year. Senator James Skoufis, Democrat from Orange County, says he understands, but he's disappointed.
Really, what we're all trying to do here is level the playing field for the millions of really frustrated fans that exist in the state that can't access their favorite artists and sports teams.
Thank you to the New York Public News Network for that report. Now, news from Northeast Pennsylvania, where state officials have downgraded the Wayne County Office of Children and Youth Agency's license to provisional, citing multiple failures. For more details, I spoke with Boris Krauchenyuk, reporter for WVIA News, earlier this afternoon. Boris, welcome to the Local Edition.
Thanks for having me.
So this status change comes from the Pennsylvania Department of Human Services, right? What are they saying?
It does. They're saying that the Wayne County Office of Children and Youth, they downgraded the license from full to provisional, and they say they did it because of numerous failures to properly document cases, and including in one instance when a child died in 2023. Yes, 2023.
And that's a pretty prominent case. There is a long list of failures along with this news, but that's kind of the most prominent one. And it's a story that the listener may remember. It's the November 2023 arrest and then the later conviction of Michael Crowell in the shaken baby death of a three-month-old boy. That arrest started with a report to the agency. According to the state, what did Wayne County do wrong in that instance?
In that instance, they were supposed to do a risk assessment on everybody in the household, and they didn't do that. And their response has been that we're going to do that from now on. So the exact wording is that they're supposed to do a risk assessment that included the characteristics of the parent, caregiver, household members, and the primary person responsible for the welfare of a child and perpetrator. They don't mention the name of the case in the paperwork, but it matches up with the Crowell case.
Right, in terms of the sort of things that were involved in that case and not necessarily involved with some of these other failures. Can you give us just a couple examples of some of the other things that they cited?
Most of it was just paperwork. They didn't report to the Department of Human Services cases on time. They didn't describe what made the placement of a child necessary at least once. Most of it was just keeping up with the paperwork, fortunately for them. The interesting thing about it was that they grew concerned enough that they were not nailing the paperwork all the time. And so they were, even though the inspection was for the most recent licensing period, they've reached back all the way to 2024 and pointed out that this kind of thing has gone on for a while and referred specifically to the child, the case where the child died.
So
three-month-old boy, by the way.
These licensing renewals must happen fairly often then, if going just a couple years back to 2024 is a little bit further than the typical licensing period.
I think they do it annually. So they're regularly inspected, or maybe even at least 6 months. And this provisional license is for 6 months. So before the end of November, the inspectors will be back and see how they're doing and whether or not they've improved the way they've promised. They're basically promising that they're going to do everything that the law requires now. And the county commissioner, who I spoke to, basically said that they are struggling with staffing shortages, and that's been kind of epidemic statewide at CYES agencies since COVID-19. It happened. Lackawanna County had a real problem with its, which is where Scranton is, had a real problem with its Office of Children and Youth, and so did Luzerne County, which is where Wilkes-Barre is.
You spoke with Wayne County Commissioner Jocelyn Kramer, who, as you say, chalk it mainly up to staffing shortages, and kind of reiterated what you said. A lot of these failures were, clerical and reporting errors. But I was going to ask, are these types of problems in your reporting, are they any worse for more rural areas of the Commonwealth than more populated counties? But, I mean, Luzerne, there's some folks there.
Well, the paperwork stuff is something you see very often. And so a lot of times it doesn't lead to and I've watched these, I've been through a number of these inspections where CYS, children and youth agencies were downgraded. You don't see them rise to the level of, where they downgrade a license usually. But if it keeps going on, then things start getting serious. They want to see full compliance at all times. They won't ding you if you're doing it, a couple of times, but they will if they see a persistent pattern. And that's what it looks like they have here. They went back to a couple of years all the paperwork is attached to the license that goes back a couple of years.
And it sounds like the Department of Human Services noticing that pattern and want to change it. They want to make sure that gets corrected.
Yeah. Yeah, and these are, you know, important. Anytime you're placing someone, you have to, you know, defend why you're placing them. You're taking someone away from a parent or a caregiver. You have to, you know, you have to have that all documented, you know, because it can be challenged, it can be appealed. So you will want to be very accurate and specific about why you're doing what you're doing when you have one of these jobs.
Is there anything for the public to be watching for in the next 6 months with the Wayne County Office of Children and Youth, or is there really nothing to watch for until we get to November and the state comes back to see if Wayne County is complying?
You won't see any, I mean, unless you're involved in a case, you won't see anything publicly, but presumably they are taking steps to fix things. And the Commissioner Kramer said that they expect that this is going to be a one-and-done provisional license. Under state law, they can issue up to 4 provisional licenses, usually at 6-month periods, and after the 4th, they can revoke the license of an agency to protect children. I don't know of any instance where that's happened before, but it's not uncommon for the Department of Human Services to issue multiple provisional licenses before the problem gets addressed. The commissioner doesn't think it'll take that long. They think they'll get this well in hand and get their full license back this fall, but it wouldn't be unusual not to.
We've been talking to Boris Krawczyniuk, reporter for WVIA News, and his work is up now at WVIA.org. And Boris, I thank you so much for going over this with us.
Thanks for having me.
We've got more news for you on the local edition. Leah Mayo reports on the Clinton Township Planning Board meeting last night, where the proposed 700-acre data center in Wayne County was discussed, and the latest on that major fire in Poughkeepsie. Stay with us.
You're listening to the local edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
The ground has shifted in Washington on AI policy, and the door has now been cracked open to have a bigger conversation about whether or not there should be other rules or regulations in the future.
I'm Michael Barbaro. That's today on The Daily from The New York Times.
When the Pope released his AI encyclical, the co-founder of Anthropic sat beside him and gave a speech.
How will we ensure that the gains of AI are shared globally? It is an unsolved problem.
But is it really?
We have historically proven tools that are actually pretty good at redistributing wealth and power. They're called taxes.
How Anthropic markets itself as a moral leader. Don't miss this week's On the Media from WNYC.
Saturday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
It's the local edition. I'm Jason Dole. Residents continue to push back against a nearly 700-acre, 20-plus building data center campus proposed in Clinton Township in Wayne County, Pennsylvania. Tim Bruno spoke with River Reporter editor Leah Mayo for the latest developments from the township's Planning Commission and Board of Supervisor meetings this past week.
Last Friday was the first meeting the township was having with its new interim solicitor. Solicitor was replaced sort of as of that meeting. And the new interim solicitor, whose name is Ronald Bujaj, said that, according to his opinion, the data center moratorium that Clinton Township had tried to put in place wasn't legal, according to the Pennsylvania Municipalities Planning Code. So the moratorium had been considered as a way for the township to halt any kind of like data center development until it had its ordinances in order. But according to this new solicitor's opinion, there is some doubt that moratorium would stand, that it's something that would be legal. So if it's not, then the application sort of that had been submitted, if it was considered complete, which is something we'll talk about in a second, that application would be like need to be considered under the current ordinance before any kind of change to the ordinance could come through. They did also talk about sort of some of the things that or the development of the data center ordinance that they're talking about Some residents questioned whether they could like turn that ordinance around really quickly, asking about whether one could be adopted in the next 30 days, specifically like adding zoning to the township. He said it was unlikely, saying it would take some time. But he mentioned that an ordinance amending the current subdivision and land development ordinance or an amendment to that could be put together in like 6 weeks to 2 months. So that just depends on like the experts getting together and making sure that that amendment would have everything needed in it for the township to be accurately and adequately protected against this kind of data center development.
And another interesting part of this is that township supervisors voted to replace their solicitor with another attorney as interim solicitor, and both of them seem to have some ties to the applicant for the data center.
Yeah, this is something where the stated reason for removing the prior solicitor was that he had provided legal representation for Scott Lindy, the head of the corporation that is behind this proposal, and did not disclose it to the Board of Supervisors before acting as solicitor on the data center project. However, the person they're replacing him with, Ronald Bajaj, as interim solicitor, also has a connection to Lindy. He said that he had prepared a joint waiver of conflict of interest, a document that would allow him to serve as the township solicitor on the data center project. He said the waiver prevents any information about his representation of the township from being shared with Scott Lindy. But it's also something that's impacted the development of this project in other areas. Two of the members of the Township Planning Commission have recused themselves from discussions about this project when it's come up due to business connections they've had with Lindy Corporation. So it's a major corporation in the area, and in a way, it feels like there's no way around it, that these connections are going to continue to impact the project.
And how did residents who attended that meeting react?
Unfavorably, I think is fair to say. There were some attacks on this interim solicitor on his ability to be impartial due to prior representation and involvement with Lindy Corporation. There was also just some questioning about the timelines around how soon these ordinances could come in place. So it's, again, something that residents are still very passionate about. It's something that there is a lot of community interest in, both immediately in Clinton Township and in the broader area.
And so that was a meeting on May 29th. That was the Board of Supervisors meeting. There was a Planning Commission meeting on June 3rd, Wednesday. What happened at that meeting?
Yeah, at that meeting, the consideration on the table was whether this data center application was complete. So the applicants had submitted a proposal April 30 at a Planning Commission meeting at the start of May. They decided, hey, we didn't have these plans 10 days in advance of the meeting, so we can't hear them at this meeting. We're going to hear them in June. The applicants revised the plans and sort of resubmitted them, I believe, with the date they were saying of May 20 with that final version of the plans. And this meeting of June 3rd was the first time the Planning Commission was really talking about these plans in open session. It was them deciding very specifically, like, do we have enough information submitted to consider this a complete application? And there was a lot of sort of talk back and forth between the engineers for the project, as well as members of the public and an attorney sort of brought by the public to represent them. And ultimately, the Planning Commission did decide that the application was not complete. And they specified four different aspects of the township's subdivision and land development ordinance that were needed to be done and, in their opinion, weren't done. One of them was related to sewage disposal information. One of them was related to an analysis of the view shed, so like the impact of the project on views of the surrounding area. Another one was historic resources / significant features. And then there was a specific like subclause they cited, 402.7, which reads, quote, the townships shall require any additional information based on the specific characteristics of the proposed project. And that's one where the Planning Commission decided that they needed a they needed another meeting after this, and that they're going to do an emergency meeting for to talk about what specifically might be included under that. Like, they need to go through their ordinances and just kind of double check, like, okay, based on the specific characteristics of this project, what else might be needed to be included?
So this doesn't stop the data center from proceeding. It's just the application was ruled incomplete, and now the Planning Commission members have to tell developers exactly what was missing so they can update and amend the application.
Exactly. In the future, they can, you know, come back and resubmit, like, once they know what is missing. I think the questions that, honestly, I don't know that anyone knows the answers to at this point in time are how long that's going to take from the applicants and how long it's going to take for the township to have its ordinance for data centers in effect and how those two things are going to interact. Because if the town or if the developers of this project don't have a completed application before the township can put its data center ordinances into effect, I think it's a question that, you know, may end up needing to be litigated of whether that project will need to follow the new ordinances or whether it will just have to go by what was, you know, in effect at the time when it was first submitted. If the applicants can, you know, fix all of the remedy or remedy all of the faults and submit it and have it accepted before the township can put its ordinances into place, that's kind of a different question. But, you know, either way, this is something that everyone is kind of figuring out together. And it's, you know, something with huge stakes, both for the developers and for members of the community. So it's something that people will continue to talk about. It's something that people will continue to be passionate about as events progress.
How were local residents feeling at that meeting? They were continuing to push back. What was the mood like with residents there?
Yeah, the mood was combative, I'd say. At times, you know, it almost felt like a sporting event where a member of the public would point out a deficiency in the plans that the engineers weren't kind of immediately able to meet, and that you would just get this like huge round of applause or this huge round of cheers from the audience. It was also something where the interim solicitor was having kind of a really hard time keeping the meeting on track, where he kept insisting, like, the only thing we're talking about tonight is completeness. We're not talking about, like, the broad impacts of this project. We're not talking about, you know, whether this project is good for the area necessarily. All that stuff is going to come in later. There will be a public hearing where you have the chance as members of the public to express those kinds of feelings. But right now, tonight, the only thing we're talking about is completeness. And, you know, for the most part, people did direct their comments toward completeness, but they also care a lot about what this will do to their area. So that absolutely came through, and it you know, led to a very heated set of discussions. And it was a fairly packed room. I think as packed, if not more, than the first time people were meeting about this project. So it's something that the community has absolutely continued to have an interest in, and I'm sure will continue to have an interest in.
Do we know what's next when it comes to the data center's agenda items for either the Board of Supervisors or the Planning Commission?
The immediate next step is the emergency meeting of the Planning Commission, which I don't believe they set a date for that, but said it would be fairly soon, like within the next week or so. Beyond that, future meetings of the Township Board of Supervisors and the Planning Commission. The Planning Commission specifically for future meetings on the reapplication. It's, again, unclear exactly, you know, how long it's going to take for the applicants to remedy the deficiencies that the Planning Commission brings up, or whether it will choose to do that or choose to try and take another approach around that decision. Yeah, I think it's just a situation you and me and a whole bunch of people are going to keep following very, very closely as further updates come out.
We will certainly be checking back in with you. Liam Mayo, editor of the River Reporter. You can read his reporting about this and other stories at riverreporter.com. Liam, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you, Liam. Well, one more story before we go tonight, because as of this afternoon, the fire at the historic Hudson River Psychiatric Center was still active. More than 24 hours after firefighters first responded to the blaze that consumed the massive property in Poughkeepsie, just about a mile from the Hudson River. WAMC's Lower Hudson Valley Bureau Chief Elias Guerra has more about how the scene unfolded yesterday.
Mid-Hudson News reported the Fairview Fire Department arrived at the scene of the blaze shortly after 11 a.m. The fire reportedly began in the historic Avery Building, but a spokesperson for the department said by Wednesday evening the blaze had reached four structures on the sprawling property. All affected buildings were vacant at the time of the fire. More than 50 emergency personnel and a dozen fire engines from as far away as Ulster County responded to the fire. A Fairview Fire Department spokesperson said fighting a fire at an abandoned property covered in overgrowth was similar to fighting a fire in the woods. The spokesperson said the size of the building posed another challenge. A firefighter on the scene, who was granted anonymity because they were not permitted to speak publicly, said the fire was horrible. He said first responders tried to stop it from spreading as much as they could. In particular, they tried to protect one building undergoing renovations. However, he said, quote, it went up like a tinderbox. He said there was heavy construction equipment on the scene due to the renovations, and an operator had to be called in to move the machines away. Speaking Wednesday afternoon, Dutchess County Communications Director Colleen Pillis said the fire was, quote, all hands on deck situation.
It is a very active, very involved fire. As a matter of fact, you can actually see flames from quite a distance. We can see them here in our office. People are asked to avoid that area of Route 9.
According to the county, no injuries have been reported. However, the firefighter who spoke to WAMC said two firefighters went to the hospital on Wednesday due to dehydration and low blood sugar. Dutchess County Executive Sue Serino recommended that those with asthma and respiratory conditions keep windows shut. While Route 9 remained open to traffic, the roads leading up to the scene were blocked off, as was the shopping plaza. Still, locals were seen bringing ice, water, and food to first responders, including two workers from a nearby steward's shop. One of them was Gwen Yagya.
Can I ask, what were the materials that you brought?
Just water, steward's drinks, pizzas, food.
Awesome. Yeah. And how did you hear that, like, you know, they were looking for that? Or you just, like, decided?
We just decided that's the steward's way to be. Just to bring stuff and be part of the community.
Nearby in Quiet Cove Riverfront Park, while some folks were still playing pickleball, others like Paula Dietrich stopped to watch the fire.
It's sad. It's sad to see it go. It's my childhood driving by here every day all the time, looking at it. To now be here and not have it be the way it was, or just to see it, is just sad.
Several fires have been reported at the facility, including a 2018 fire that was intentionally set. The psychiatric center was established in 1868 and has been designated a National Historic Landmark. A firefighter who spoke to WAMC Thursday described the blaze as a, quote, deep-seated fire, like a bonfire when the coals are still burning. He said as of Thursday, there is only a skeleton crew on watch to make sure the fire does not spread. For the New York Public News Network, I'm Elias Guerra.
Thank you, Elias. And thank you, listener, for being here with me. I'm Jason Dole, and that is it for tonight's local edition. Coming up at 7, we've got 2 hours of Ramble Tamble with Andy Carlson spinning live music for you, followed by Connect the Dots with David Christian at 9. Stay with us now for more news from The Daily. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.
Support comes from Garnet Health Medical Center, Catskills, with campuses in Harris and Calicoon, offering inpatient and outpatient services to Sullivan County and surrounding communities. Learn more at garnethealth.org.
NEPA Give starts tonight. Show your support for Radio Catskill and other great nonprofit organizations serving Northeast Pennsylvania. You have just 24 hours to give, from 7 this evening until 7 tomorrow evening, so be sure to make your donation on time. You don't need a Pennsylvania zip code to donate, and every donation gets Radio Catskill closer to its $2,500 goal. Donate to Radio Catskill before 7 p.m. tomorrow at nepagives.org.